That ammonium nitrate-fueled explosion in Beirut, which cratered the ground, killed over 100 people so far and injured several thousand more, was horrific. But for many, that white plume of smoke that mushroomed up before collapsing also brought to mind, chillingly, the true mushroom cloud over Hiroshima, Japan, 75 years ago today. It was August 6, 1945. America detonated the first atomic bomb, immediately incinerating 80,000 people. 140,000 would die of radiation or other injuries. Decades later, survivors still suffer, and they gather today as bells tolled. A few days after Hiroshima, a more powerful bomb devastated Nagasaki. The Japanese, days later, admitted defeat. The war was over. But the cost? What was the cost? Jim Walsh is here now, security analyst. He's with MIT's Security Studies Program. So, Jim, we have these two clouds we know completely different, one in Beirut, an accident, the other, a profound decision. But people in Japan are tweeting out today that it wasn't until they saw Beirut that they truly could understand Hiroshima, how big it was. Did you think of Hiroshima, too, when you saw that earlier this week?
You know, Robin, I can't believe you started out here because I felt exactly the same way. I saw that cloud and had an emotional impact on me, but I would go even further. Now, as you say, it was not a nuclear weapon, but in a way, it is a cautionary tale, even a warning about our nuclear future in a week that we recognize these anniversaries. You know, like a storehouse of explosives sitting on a Beirut dock, the world's thousands of nuclear weapons sit and wait for their moment. And like in Beirut, over all these years, we could have gotten rid of them, we should have gotten rid of them, but we didn't. And at the end of the Cold War, we sort of moved on to other things. And so today, people don't know, or like in Beirut, they've forgotten. And deep underground, deeper still under the ocean, the bomb waits quietly for its turn. We are 75 years in, but unless we change course, one day we will all be Beirut, but the scale will be unimaginable.
Okay, well, that's pretty chilling. And just to remind people, it's pretty agreed upon what blew up in Beirut was a store of this ammonium nitrate for explosives that had been seized, and it was just sitting there to keep it from being used.
Just sitting there, just like all our bombs continue to sit there.
Okay. Well, take us back. 1945, World War II had really been, you know, dragging for nearly 4 years. The U.S. develops the atomic bomb. Talk about the debate about actually using it.
Well, you know, there wasn't a ton of debate. There were a few voices who opposed it, but there was pretty much a consensus. And you know better than anyone, Robin, that there have been bookshelves of tomes written on this topic, emphasizing different factors. But I think the first thing to do is remember the context, which is what you point to. World War II had cost millions of lives by that point. All the sides, at one point or another, had targeted civilians, something that is illegal today under international law. We would not be able legally to execute the use of that weapon because it targeted civilians. But FDR had promised to seek unconditional surrender from Japan, and now Truman, after FDR's death, had inherited that position and had inherited the bomb. And so when you have as your goal unconditional surrender, it was definitely a path laid towards using the bomb. And there were several factors that went into the decision. First, obviously, being a desire to end the war and to do so without having to invade Japan. And people can debate whether that was possible or not, but that was certainly one of the driving considerations. And then scholars have pointed to other factors over the generations over time, such as race. You know, this was against Japan. It was not against a European country. The looming competition with the Soviet Union, bureaucratic momentum, all those probably played a role. But I think at the end of the day, this was on a fast track. And a lot of it had to do with the war itself, what the war had brought us to at that point.
Here is President Harry Truman speaking on that day, August 6, 1945, letting Americans know the bomb has been used.
With this bomb, we have now added a new and revolutionary increase in destruction to supplement the growing power of our armed forces. In their present form, these bombs are now in production, and even more powerful forms are in development.
It ended the war, But what did it start?
Well, there is some debate. You know, if there's one shelf of books that, how did you make the decision? There's another couple of shelves of books that, did it cause the end of the war? I know that's a widespread opinion. I think consensus historical opinion today is it was an important factor, but it was, there were many factors. Arguably, the most important was the Soviet Union's entry into the war soon after. It's not clear the Japanese even understood the meaning of the first bomb when you look at Japanese archives. But in any case, between the bomb and between the blockade and between the Russian entry into the war, yes, Japan got out. And then that set the stage for what was going to become a superpower arms race. Thousands of nuclear tests, thousands of nuclear weapons, tens of thousands of nuclear weapons being built. Above ground testing that spread poison around the globe. And then you had in the 50s, late 50s, citizens protested. In the early 60s, they protested. And then slowly the nuclear danger began to be pulled back a little. Fewer tests, fewer weapons, more arms control. Still the danger, still enough nuclear weapons to destroy the world, but at least you're moving in the right direction. And then in recent years, really after the end of the Cold War, that momentum was lost. And so we're sort of heading back to where we used to be.
Well, President Trump wants to resume nuclear test explosions for the first time since 1992. He's pulled the U.S. out of arms control treaties. You've spoken here about North Korea's nuclear weapons. Are we in a new arms race?
If we don't change, we will be. We seem to have forgotten all those lessons. And so today, where are we today? We have nine men, and they are men, nine men who in a moment's notice could make a decision that would destroy a country, or in a couple of those cases, they have enough weapons to destroy the world, kill literally everything on the planet. And it's sort of a rogues gallery. It's Putin and it's Xi and it's, you know, a bunch of people. No one should have that ability. But not only do the weapons linger, again, waiting for us as we do nothing about them. Russia is going to spend more. We're going to spend more. And when we spend more, that causes other countries to spend more. And as we pull out of these treaties, you know, it's a lot easier to tear something up than to build it. That's certainly something we've learned over the last several years. Yep. You know, what's going to replace it?
And Jim, I just want to hear from a voice before we go, because the people who were heavily involved in this sometimes had the most words of caution. Bruce Blair was a launch control officer. He literally had his finger on the trigger to launch nuclear weapons, later crusaded for arms control, founded the group Global Zero. We spoke with him back in 2017. Let's listen.
I worked my entire career on the risks of the use of nuclear weapons, mostly at the Brookings Institution. And at some point, I decided that given the proliferation of weapons to more countries and all of the risks of accidental and unauthorized use, a bad call by an irrational person, that all of those risks just can't be managed indefinitely. Yeah. We have to eliminate all nuclear weapons, or inevitably they're going to be used probably in our lifetimes. There's really no long-term management of these risks.
Jim Walsh, Bruce Blair died on July 19th in Philadelphia. He was just 72. Just, you got a few seconds here. We should listen to his voice.
Bruce Blair, tremendously. He was one of those rare birds, direct experience with nuclear weapons, a scholar, an entrepreneurial spirit. It's a huge loss at a time when many of the brightest lights in the field have passed away. Jan Nolan was a trailblazer, died this year. Marty Mallon at Harvard. You asked me before whether I was worried. Yes, I am. Each generation since 45 has taken up this call. Now the memories are fading and the stars are passing and the bomb waits. So it's with great sadness that we have lost Bruce, and I hope we can do well by him.
Yeah. Again, Bruce Blair, who was a launch control officer, again, his finger on the trigger to launch nuclear weapons, and now telling people to beware of that finger on the trigger. He died July 19th. Jim Walsh, Here and Now security analyst with MIT Security Studies, on this anniversary of Hiroshima. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin.